this. So we have a couple more practical aspects of Haggadah to talk about today. So we're starting on page 345. What's the temperature for the water that you do Haggadah in? So we assume that it's boiling, which is not a bad assumption. So take a look here. This is the Beis Yosef quoting the Smak, Sefer Mitzvos Katan, from the school of Bali Tosfos, the Kaso Smak, the Hagala Eina Moeles, Ela Davka Beroschen, Shemal Resicha. Hagala only works if you have boiling water that is raising up a boil, which means it means there's bubbles, really is what it means. Aval Hayad Soledes Mayhem Lomahani. But if it's just Yad Soledes, that's not enough to kasher. So that Rishon is very clear that the water needs to be boiling. Now if you look at the Ramah quoted here. So the Ramah is commenting on the Shulchan Aruch, which is not quoted here. What it explains here, the Ramah understands that the Shulchan Aruch allowed Haggadah even in water that was not boiling, and he disagrees with that. Achrabim cholkim asvira luhu de'ein Haggadah moeles klum ein amayim roschem. So even though the Shulchan Aruch says you can do Haggadah with water that's not boiling, meaning the Shulchan Aruch seems to paskin not like the Smak.
So the Shulchan Aruch is makel compared to the Smak.
Yeah. Now who is the Shulchan Aruch being makel like? So that's a we're gonna see in a moment. You know, the Smak writes this very clearly. It'd be surprising, and if there's no other opinion who disagrees, how could the Shulchan Aruch go against the Rishon that's saying it, you know, beferush, that you need to have boiling water? So we'll see that in a moment. So the Rama says that many disagree with this, meaning the Smak and others. The Rush also writes it has to be boiling. For example, the Svirlu, yeah, so Haggadah, you need to have boiling water. Al-Kain, Yeshli Zahir, concludes the Rama, therefore you have to be careful. Afilu Kodem Zaman Isuro, even before the time that Chametz becomes prohibited, meaning, let's say, before the sixth hour, I think it is, or maybe it's even talking about earlier in the day on Erev Pesach, Shalu Yanuchu, Meiri Sichasan, Kol Zaman Shemagin. So, We're not going to get into exactly this stuff about what time Chametz becomes Usur and what the difference is, but the point is that the Rama is saying any time you do Haggadah, it has to be boiling. And he says at the end, as long as you're doing Haggadah, you have to make sure Shalo Yanuchu Meirisichasa, that you have to make sure that it doesn't rest from its boiling, meaning it's pretty common when you put in, let's say you put in a bunch of forks and spoons into your pot with boiling water, it cools it down. And then the temperature could drop and it could lose its boil. So when that happens, you want to wait to take them out until it's boiling again. And then you could put more kalem in, you know, once it's boiling again as well.
I'm sorry, you said you would take them out?
You would wait. You would wait to take them out until.
Oh, you'd wait. Right. You don't have to take them out. So start over again. But you'd leave it until it reaches proper boiling temperature.
Yeah. Yeah.
When the Smak says that he uses a lashon of davka beroschin shemala resicha, when he says shemala resicha, does he mean to say that you could see the bubbles coming off the water surface, or what? Like, what does he mean by that?
Well, that is a good question. What are the bubbles? Right, assuming he's talking about bubbles. Yeah. What type do you need? There's a rolling boil, which is like obviously like the fullest boil.
Okay.
And then there's a lot of little bubbles that
right.
start.
Right.
I believe that we were told from Rav Moshe Heineman of the Star K that even the smallest bubbles mm-hmm. are considered boiling, at least minimally. Maybe it's ideal to get a rolling boil. But if you can't, at least, you know, any bubbles are good. Mm-hmm. This comes up a lot, and we'll talk about this a little more. This comes up in many commercial settings when we're koshering things. It's not always easy to get certain appliances or equipment to come to a boil. That could be often what a particular kli is designed for, but maybe it got weak with age or whatever it is, and it just, you can't get it to the right temperature. So sometimes you have to know what the minimum is, mm-hmm. you know. Okay, so if you look at the note above the Ramah, the Sefer says that the poskim, the Ramah understands that the Shulchan Aruch is being makel, that you don't need to have boiling water for a gullah, but the Mishnah Berurah says that the Ramah misunderstood the Shulchan Aruch. Even the Shulchan Aruch agrees the water for a gullah has to be boiling. So we're not going to go get into that issue so much, but let's see what the, you know, what the Shulchan Aruch himself holds. Let's see what the Mordechai says on our sheet. So, well, I'd like to see this whole piece, but we'll do it relatively quickly. So what they're talking about here is, this is the top page on page one, is how to kosher a barrel. How to kosher a barrel. Now, right, it's too big to dip into a pot. So how do you kosher it? So the Ri, Rabbeinu Yitzchak, says that you open it up. You open up the top, let's say, and you pour in boiling water, and then you roll the barrel around. So even though the hot boiling water that you pour out of the pot into the barrel is only hitting some of the panels of the barrel, right? Let's say the barrel has like 12 panels. I don't know how many a typical barrel needs to have it, you know, to be a barrel, but so you have 12 of them. Two or three of them are getting directly splashed, then the rest is just being rolled around, right? It's the water that hits the second group of panels is like cliché-y water, right? It's not coming directly from the hot pot, so the water cooled down a little bit, so does it kosher? The Ri says, or the Rabbeinu Tam says, it does. Or no, the Ri, the Rabbeinu Tam comes a little later, because the whole thing is considered one unit, basically. Yeah, it does say this from Rabbeinu Tam. Okay, that's the Ri's approach of how to kosher a barrel, and why are we koshering the barrel? Maybe it's from Stam Yenam, from non-kosher wine, I would assume, right? The next thing is Tosos Harav Rabbeinu Elchanan. This is in the middle of the paragraph. It's a Haggah. Mitosos Harav Rabbeinu Elchanan. Kol Abela Hagyo L'chavis Yishpoch Pam Rishon Al Arbenisarm. So first you have to spill from your boiling water on four panels. V'shuv Yarsiach HaMayim. Then heat up your water again. V'yishboch al arba nesarim, and do the next four. V'shuv yarsiach hamayim v'yishboch al arba nesarim, and go do the next four. Achiyagu kulo, until you have poured for directly from the pot on all of them. I mean, he seems to not like this, like, pour some water in and roll the whole thing around, right, which would be the easy way. No, you have to do it the hard way. V'yimasa be'einecha l'harsiach kol kach pa'amim amayim, and if this is too much of a tircha for you, to keep boiling up, you know, a large quantity of water so many times, it's going to take you like all day to do this for each barrel. yasim ka'ara gadol b'mayim b'yorah. So you take a big bowl and you put it into the pot that you have a large pot. It's not big enough for the barrel, but it's large enough for your bowl. When you boil up the water, so you keep it in there while it's boiling. Once it's boiled, you take out that bowl full of water, and it says v'yagil arbin asarim, and then you use that to do hagala on four of the panels. I don't know if he's talking about taking apart the barrel or maybe pouring direct. Sounds like probably you pour directly from that bowl onto your four things, and then I don't know if this is saving water. I'm not exactly sure what you gain by using this bowl, but he says you could use a bowl, take it out of the pot, and then pour it onto your barrel panels. So now if you look at like four lines from the bottom in the middle, V'yafal gav dekeshem akbiya haka'arda min ha'yora poseich resichas haka'arda. Even though this isn't the water originally from the pot, the kli rishon, it's still considered a kli rishon. Even though there's no boiling going on in this bowl, once you take it out of the pot, it's not. There's no heat source under it anymore. It's not boiling. So the mouth, because fine, why? Demali im me haka'ara roschen ali dechom hamachvas. Who cares if the water is boiling, and by boiling he must just mean hot, from the heat of the pan, meaning I think he means the bowl, or atzmo, or the fire itself, shere yora atzma kishimasalkino samina ish, posik resichasa, vefilo ache havi kli risha. Meaning, he seems to be saying, if you take a pot off the fire, it stops boiling. But you're nevertheless allowed to do hagala in that pot. So the same thing with this bowl. The water in there is not boiling, but it's still considered a kli rishon. I think he's considering a kli rishon because it was on the fire. It was boiling in a pot that was on the fire. So you're fine. You're still kashering with a kli rishon. So anyway, the thing that we see from this is kind of an interesting case. That's why we talked about all the details. But the point is that the water doesn't actually have to have bubbles. Doesn't have to actually be boiling to kosher with. That's what we see here. So that's like a second opinion. Unlike the smock, that it seems, even though the temperature drops a little bit, it's not 212, you're still allowed to kosher with that.
So this would potentially be that what the Shulchan Aruch is essentially...
Potentially, right. Right.
Even though he didn't...
The Mishnah Berurah says that he doesn't really hold that.
That he doesn't really hold his own psak.
He agrees that you need to have it needs to be boiling. But yeah, if the Mishnah Berurah is like the Ramah, clearly understood that the Shulchan Aruch was being lenient, right? You don't have to actually have boiling water.
Okay.
So actually, the Torah brings these two opinions too. Here, if you look in the top of 346, if you're kashering a pot, magilim the kli rishon, you kasher it in a kli rishon. V'nikra kli rishon ba'odor oseach afilo eino al gabi ha'ish. A kli rishon is even if you take it off the fire. This is like Rabbeinu Elchanan was saying, right? If I want to kasher all my forks and knives. And they're sitting across my stove's over here, and they're over there. I could take the pot off the fire and bring my pot to the forks and knives and dip them in over there on the counter. V'yesh omrim, im nishtamish bakli ba'odo al gabi ha'ish, if it's a ladle, let's say, if it's, you used it in a utensil, it's on the fire, you're stirring clam chowder on the fire with this ladle, you can't kosher it in a pot that's not on the fire. It has to be hagola only in a kli that the fire is under it. And that seems logical, says the Torah.
And so to I'm assuming then not only the ladle, but the soup pot itself, the soup pot from the pantry.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So let's say for Pesach, let's say you make usually make matzo balls that are chametz in a pot that you want to use for Pesach. You would have to kasher that in water that's boiling on the fire, according to the Torah. Right? According to Rabbeinu Elchanan, it would seem, as long as the water is hot, it doesn't have to actually be on the fire. So the Shulchan Aruch does clearly paskin this way regarding knives. Sakinem magilan b'kli rishon umutaren. Ukli rishon nikra shir tichu bo mayim al ha'esh afilu eno ata al ha'esh rak shoden aroseach. So he says that you're allowed to kasher a knife explicitly, he says, even if the pot has already come off the fire. So, the point being that the Shulchan Aruch is definitely makel in some cases. So, the Sefer here explains that he is only leaning because knives are not normally, you don't normally stir a pot with a knife. They're used at most, maybe sometimes something came off the grill, which would seem to be libun, but you usually use it in a klisheni or a klishlishi. That's how he concludes over here in our Sefer, that if you did not use, like let's say a knife that's not normally used in a pot, you're allowed to kasher in a kli rishon that's not boiling, like the Shulchan Aruch says. Let's see the sources here quickly. So the Reb Moshe concludes similarly to this halacha that we're seeing regarding knives. He says it applies even, let's say, this is a very common question in factories. Let's say they pasteurize a non-kosher grape drink, so it's non-kosher grape juice. They pasteurize it at 160 degrees, 170 degrees Fahrenheit, and it doesn't. The equipment doesn't go to. So what do you have to kosher it at? It has to be boiling, right? So the equipment doesn't go to 212. Let's say they never use it to pasteurize at that temperature. The gaskets might be compromised if you heat the water up to such a high temperature. So can you kosher it? So this is something that is never used at 212. So can you kosher it at whatever temperature it's used at? 160 or 170. So one opinion says no. If you look at the bottom, this Sefer Shulchan Aruch Al-Hilchos Basar B'Challo, this is Rav Aaron Pfeffer. He was a rabbi in South Africa, I believe, in Johannesburg. So he writes that regarding L'inyan Shir HaChom, what temperature does Hagolah have to be at? Af im le'inyan b'liyasa iser maspik shir chom shel yad soledes bo. Even if yad soledes, let's say 120 is enough heat to cause a utensil become treif. The clam chowder or the grape juice was only heated up to 120. But b'chol ofen le'inyan haflatasa iser tzarech davka shir chom shemal resichos. But unless the water is boiling that you're using to kasher with, That cannot extract flavor. To put flavor in, 120 is enough. To take flavor out, it has to be boiling. Shayoser kal nivla ha'iser b'kli me'asher niflat mimenu. It's much easier for flavor to be absorbed than it is to extract it. Mashein kein linyan sug achom matzu chachamim kibolo kachbalto. So he's just explaining, right? What about kibolo kach palto. This is a halacha that we've seen throughout the whole, Hilchos kashering things. The same way it absorbs, that's how you expel it. That's only with, do you cook it on a grill? Do you cook it in a kli rishon? Do you cook it in a kli sheni? That's only tells you how, what type of utensil it is. But when it's talking about the level of heat, it doesn't matter what temperature it absorbed at. If it absorbed at 120 or 160, you have to kosher it at 212. This is the strict approach. Rav Moshe, we're not going to read it inside, but he says very clearly that ideally you kosher everything at 212. But if you only use something at 160, it could be koshered at 160. So this is pretty much what the OU says, and this is much more, there's some interesting aspects here, which we don't have time to really go into the details, but they basically say kosher everything at 212 with Hagalah. But there's a note at the end, sometimes if you can't do that, ask the rabbinic coordinator and they'll tell you, like this is talking for the Mashgichem, and they'll tell you, sometimes you could be more lenient, right? So they do allow koshering in certain circumstances, and it's pretty routine, even though it's not 212, it's as long as the treif didn't get absorbed at a higher temperature than you're koshering at, then you're okay. And we have a factory locally that we give Ashkafa to, that the Vav does, this grape juice case, right? They pasteurize grape juice on the same line that they use for kosher. So they kosher it, I can't remember if it's 170 or 180 that they pasteurize at. They kosher it at about 190 or 195. Like, that's what we require them to do, not to go all the way up to boiling, because their equipment doesn't normally do that. So we allow them to kosher it at a lower temperature. You can see more on the second page. This is from Rav David Cohn's from the CRC Sefer, but I wanna skip to the next topic regarding shtifa. So if you go to page 348. So after you do Hagalah, the Torah says, you, just as you rinse out a cup after you're done drinking from it, you should rinse out let's say you kashered a fork, you should rinse it off with cold water. Because of Rashi, Shetzarech Shistefenu Miyad B'mayim Karm, you have to rinse it with cold water immediately. Be'od hachamin alav, while the water is still hot on your fork that you just kashered. Why do you have to do that? Oh, kedesh lo yachzor v'yivla, because it's going to reabsorb. So this is based on the fundamental question we've discussed a few times with Hagalah. How does it work? Anytime you extract flavor, why doesn't it go right back in? So one answer is that in boiling water, and we saw this, I think, only briefly, one of the answers is, which we don't normally paskin like, the boiling water can only extract. So if you have a tray fork, you're dipping into a boiling pot of water, it takes out the clam chowder flavor, and now it's in the boiling water. If the temperature just becomes warm and not boiling, then it will go back into the fork. So first of all, you have to make sure that the temperature doesn't dip below. But second of all, you have to wash it off right afterwards, because if you just let the water sit, the treif water sit on your fork, it's not going to be boiling for very long, right? It's going to cool down, and it's going to be absorbed back into your fork. So what do you do, says Rashi? You rinse it off with cold water, because once you cool it down, it can't be absorbed into the fork. Then it's all over, right? So rinse it off immediately. But the Ri says no. V'rikaso shafilu lo shetofo miyad. Even if you don't rinse it immediately, lo nasar, kenu chozer boleya. It's not going to be prohibited, because it doesn't go back in. So it doesn't explain, but why doesn't it go back in? Because the Ri says you have to do one of two things. Either you have to only do Haggadah when there's 60 times the volume of your fork, or you do it only when the fork is not ben yomo. So, and we don't care if non-ben yomo flavor goes back into your fork. It's too weak to cause any problem. So bottom line, and that's what we saw the halacha is, we only kosher things that are not ben yomo. So it doesn't matter if it's reabsorbed, we're not worried about that. So really, we don't have a need to wash with cold water. But the Torah concludes, nevertheless, mikol makom, no hagen, l'shotfo miyad, v'chein roi lasos. Our minig is that we do rinse it immediately, and that is what's appropriate to do. The Shulchan Aruch paskins accordingly. Next page, no hagen l'shotfo akli, b'mayim karem. Acher Haggadah Miyad. You always rinse out off the kli with cold water immediately after koshering it. There's a practical application here in the gray box, which is kind of interesting. If you kosher a countertop by pouring hot water on it, which is a form of Haggadah, Iroy, you should rinse it off with cold water, according to this minhag. Now, I want to conclude extremely briefly because we have 2 minutes. The Rambam paskins this way, that you have to rinse with cold water. But he talks about doing Haggadah in 2 different places. In Hilchos Pesach, Chametz Matzah, where he says you have to wash it with cold water. And in Hilchos Macholos Asuros, when he's talking about koshering a kli that was used with clam chowder, he doesn't mention rinsing with cold water. So why would there be any difference between koshering for Pesach and koshering from Treif? So what Rav Soloveitchik suggests very interestingly, and this fits with some of the other conversations we've had about the purpose of koshering in general, like what, in theory, what does koshering do? Is it only, this is a fundamental question about the whole topic, is it only about purging Treif flavors from the kli, or possibly it's more, in some cases, maybe it's just like when you tovel a kli, you're not eliminating any flavor from the kli. A kli was belonged to a non-Jew, now it belongs to a Jew, you're getting it ready for use in a Jewish household. Maybe there's some ruchnius, metaphysical aspect of koshering as well, that gets it ready, detaches it from its past, and gets it ready to use. So, for kosher use. So Rav Soloveitchik basically says it's in this lower right thing that a kli that's chametz, that's used for chametz, gets a title of a shame chametz. It's called the chametz tikka kli. The only way to remove that is not only by koshering it, but also by rinsing it with cold water. That's perhaps why the Rambam chametz is stricter. It has that status. Until you rinse it with cold water, it's not yet kosher. But even though you took all the chametz flavor out of it. But by treif, it doesn't have it. Only if it actually has absorptions, it's considered a treif kli. If it doesn't have any absorptions, you don't have to rinse it. You don't need that additional step. Some food for thought. Thanks for joining me, everyone. Make sure to rinse off your forks after koshering them.